The unthinkable has occurred. Human beings have set foot on the surface of the moon.
Союз, не Москва.
Союз, this is Moscow.
Добрый день, дорогие друзья.
Good day, good friends. Everyone sends you their greetings here. Greetings to you too. We're feeling good. We're in good spirits. This is something very beautiful. The color is so vivid. It's nothing like that I've seen on the ground.
You're listening to the Friday Review on New York City's WNYX. My name is Jack Schechter. No matter your politics, whether next Tuesday you intend to vote for Richard Nixon or Hubert Humphrey, whether you believe the United States is a city on a hill or one country among many, there is no doubt that yesterday, October 31st, 1968, will be a memorable date. We are hearing what was estimated to be nearly 250,000 people gathered yesterday in Moscow's Red Square. St. Petersburg. Kiev. East Berlin. And in West Berlin, on the other side of the Iron Curtain, life as usual. Indeed, for an event many politicians are calling either the grand finale of the Cold War...
There will be an invasion. Cubans and Russians coming up through the Mexican border.
Or an overture to World War III.
And I'm urging everyone in the great state of North Carolina to start building bomb shelters in the basement.
Civilian life in the West seems to be continuing as it always has. But one thing has certainly changed. The United States has decisively lost the space race.
Thank you for this first cosmic interview. Here, everyone here on Earth wishes you the best of everything and a very, very soft landing on our native land. We await you impatiently.
In the Soviet Union, Secretary Leonid Brezhnev has declared a day of national celebration.
I commend the Soviet people. The international position of the Soviet Union is strong as ever. Its authority grows worldwide.
The end of the space race also marks the end of a protracted competition between the scientists of the USSR and the USA. That is the sound of Sputnik, the very first satellite sent into orbit way back in 1957. One of the many firsts for the Soviet Union.
Russia's successful satellite launching has by no means given her a missile monopoly. It is a challenge that President Eisenhower has said America must meet to survive in the space age.
You can hear for yourself the paranoia of the time. Leadership at the Kremlin in Moscow resolutely maintained a narrative of success and competence, and not without reason. In the years following Sputnik, the United States fell short of every important milestone in the development of spaceflight. The first living being in space was a stray dog found on the streets of Moscow. Her name was Laika. The first probes to impact the lunar surface and send back photos of the far side of the moon were Soviet. Yuri Gagarin, a Soviet Air Force captain, was the first human being in space.
The flight made on April 12, 1961 was the first of its kind, the first manned space flight ever.
The first lunar orbit, the first outer space docking of two spacecraft, the first spacewalk, the United States has lost over and over again. This, in spite of NASA's budget and workforce, triple that of the Soviet space agencies. In fact, everything about the arrangement of their space program makes this an unlikely story. From what we've gathered, the Soviet Space Agency is a loose conglomeration of design bureaus directly competing with one another. Whoever can deliver the biggest promises on the lowest budget is awarded the contract. Consider this in opposition to NASA, which has a unified top-down philosophy. This is good for us because fewer mistakes will be made. On the other hand, what the Soviet program lacks in rigor, they more than make up for with audacity. In March of 1965, the tide seemed to turn in the United States' favor. We reported on a series of near disasters that plagued the Soviets' Voskhod 2 mission.
It was reported that a cosmonaut very nearly decompressed in his suit while performing a spacewalk.
It was a calculated maneuver to solve a problem that could not have been anticipated.
That's Natalia Gromyko. She's a special attaché to the Soviet Embassy in Washington, D.C., and a regular contributor to this program. She also represents the Soviet strategy to beat the United States. Sheer chutzpah.
Cosmonaut Leonov acted courageously and survived. He saved himself and his crewmates.
There were reports that all three cosmonauts on that mission were given cyanide pills in case there was a catastrophe.
I cannot confirm these reports, but I strongly object to the implication that in the event of a disaster, we should simply allow a human being to die of exposure to outer space.
2 years later, we reported on the crash of the Soyuz 1, which claimed the life of cosmonaut Vladimir Komarov. This interview was broadcast on April 14, 1967.
Ms. Gromyko, do you believe errors in the design of the Soyuz spacecraft contributed to its crash today?
There has not been a crash.
What is the intention of the Soviet space program in being deliberately secretive?
There is nothing to confirm.
When Natalia was speaking on behalf of the Soviet government, we caught her in a number of misleading statements and outright lies. Reports of the cosmonaut's death remained speculation until a radio station in Turkey picked up the following broadcast. The Kremlin confirmed that audio as coming from Vladimir Komarov, the cosmonaut piloting the Soyuz vehicle, as it fell through Earth's atmosphere at twice the speed of sound. After the crash became public, Natalia took the high road and made a statement on our program.
What could be heard clearly was Komarov giving telemetry and repeating the phrase, "How long till re-entry?" He is an outstanding cosmonaut and a hero. The notion that the space program sends people to their death is irrelevant. Regardless of whether or not it is true, our vision is what compels us to take those risks.
The very next day, we reported that a fuel tank explosion on a Cosmodrome launch pad killed three engineers. The Friday Review broke in quick succession three stories about failures in the Soviet space program. At that point, an American victory seemed certain. But then, disaster struck on a clear morning in January of 1967.
What burned? I'd have to say just about everything that was in there. The American flag was partially obscured by gray soot, but everything else burned in there.
American astronauts Gus Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee perished in a fire on board the Apollo 1 Saturn V spacecraft. They hadn't even left the ground.
The exploration of space will go ahead, whether we join in it or not. And it is one of the great adventures of all time. And no nation which expects to be the leader of other nations can expect to stay behind in this race for space.
Stirring words spoken by our late President Kennedy in 1963. The already protracted congressional hearings on NASA's budget are expected to continue for the foreseeable future, and there have been no new launches since the Apollo 1 disaster almost 2 years ago. As Natalia would say, we can only speculate as to what effect losing the space race will have on the future of NASA. What we can do is ask the major player in tonight's program what she thinks. Natalia, welcome back to the program.
My pleasure, Mr. Schechter.
So, Ms. Gromyko, what is the feeling within the Soviet Union right now?
We have triumphed. Never before has the grandeur of spirit and the invincible will of our Soviet people, their boundless persistence in work, loyalty, and affection to their homeland, manifested themselves with such strength. We bow our heads in respect for the cosmonauts who displayed exceptional courage as they crossed into a new frontier.
Yeah, that's a party line anyway. Tell us the truth. Do you personally agree with that?
I would be lying if I were to say otherwise.
Has the Soviet Union just won the Cold War?
You are asking a question better suited to a head of state. I am merely a bureaucrat.
You are merely a bureaucrat when it suits an evasive answer.
And you cease being a journalist when there is an opportunity for moral judgment.
Fair enough.
What I can say is that we will continue forward with developing orbiting defense technologies, satellites, and so forth. I predict, however, that America will continue to fall behind.
What makes you say that?
Very simple. If Secretary Brezhnev asks the best and brightest to send human beings to the moon, we will make every effort to do so at any cost. We're not like you. We are not beholden to the taxpayers approving a liter of rocket fuel here or a bag of freeze-dried food there. Your astronauts died in a fire during a routine test before they even left the planet, and it set NASA's budget approval back 2 years, maybe indefinitely. Why does the U.S. government tell everyone everything? This is something I have never understood. The Soviet people do not need to be sold to. They believe in the mission. We waste no time in petty politics.
Politics? We're trying to do this safely.
What the hell are you talking about? Clearly your politics don't work. You're trying to be safe, but 3 people died on your watch.
There is common ground. Somewhere between your philosophy and mine, there has to be a combination of words that describes what we both want. You've beaten us. You've gotten to every milestone first. Yes, but I have to believe there was some way we could have gotten there together.
We offered.
Offered what?
To go there together.
When?
In 1963. I think all the things you are saying are true, and they were exactly what Kennedy and Khrushchev were discussing. It was remarkable. I remember it was one of the few times that good intentions were not undermined by political maneuvering. Optimism mattered. Khrushchev could not make up his mind and equivocated back and forth for most of the year. Finally, Kennedy demanded an answer from him at the UN General Assembly. Kennedy said, "The next step in nuclear non-proliferation was filling the heavens with the instruments of knowledge and understanding to explore."
And then he was killed.
And then he was killed. Whatever comes next for our 2 nations will not include working together in peace. If Kennedy were still alive, we would be living in a very different world. The space race would have lasted exactly 7 years. The Cold War would have stopped dead in its tracks. Perhaps we would have finally finished the disarmament treaties and you would not be fighting a ground war in Vietnam right now. Our efforts at mutually assured destruction would have been refocused on a mission of peace and fruitful exchange. Things could have been very different.
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time. We'll have to leave it there. Thank you, Ms. Gromyko, for joining us.
Thank you, Jack.
You're listening to the Friday Review on WNYX. The program will return in just a moment.
Mr. Secretary General, delegates to the United Nations, ladies and gentlemen, we meet again in the quest for peace. Why should man's first flight to the moon be a matter of national competition? Surely we should explore whether the scientists and astronauts of our 2 countries cannot work together in the conquest of space.
We have ignition sequence start.
The Soyuz Files is presented by the West. The radio play was written by Spencer Devlin Howard, based on a postcard adventure by Nathan Turner and Spencer. You can see more of the Soyuz story at SoyuzFiles.com. It features the vocal talents of Spencer Devlin Howard, Claire Kaplan, and Nathan Turner. The dramaturg was Shannon Stockwell. The Soyuz Files was recorded at Vox Studios and The Echo at the Atwater Village Theaters. We would like to extend our thanks to Chris Fields, Alex Freeman, Andre Zinka, Tunde Skovran, the archivists at NASA, and our moms and dads for helping us make this happen. And an extra special thanks to all of those who donated to Lady Into Fox. The West is a multimedia storytelling collective based in Los Angeles with works on the stage, on the screen, and in your earbuds. If you'd like to see more of what we do, please visit us online at thewest.la.